John Mitchell and Bob Belts. The program is You Get the Blessing. Those are the Beatles singing that song. One of your favorites, Bob?
I love them all.
You know why they wrote that?
Nope.
I believe they were so popular, and we've talked about this maybe once in the couple years we've been doing this, but they were so popular that Lennon, who was always cracking little wise, said, I could write a song basically saying nothing, and people would buy it, and it would sound pretty good. So there you have it. You say hello, I say goodbye.
And we're saying hello. So
on and on and on.
Here we go.
So what's the tie-in here?
Well, you know, Mark Sanborn, who's our guest today, the two of us together, because we've ridden motorcycles together off and on for many years, have never listened to that song together.
That's a tie-in. I like to think the tie-in is this.
All right.
You're waking up, or you're driving to church, or heading for the golf course, and wondering, why am I listening to Bob Belts and Bo Mitchell in this squirrely show? And the answer is, we try to make sense out of something that most people tend to complicate a little bit, or at least in the minds of a lot of our listeners tend to complicate, and that is the third chapter of John, which says Christianity is pretty easy. You either believe there's a God who's sitting on the throne in heaven, or you don't. It's a yes or no answer. So we try to present guests to you every week that will bless your lives because they've encountered Jesus Christ and they've become Christians, and they're not sitting here, nor are we, saying we're better than anybody. In fact, we're a lot worse than most people, right? And yet we're trying to say, can we just say simply to our friends here that are listening, it's not as complicated as it seems. It's maybe not as easy as the song the Beatles wrote, but it's not as complicated
right.
as it may seem.
But back when we were listening to them, I was saying no. And so, you know, it's kind of fun to think back and now see the transition. But, you know, when God gets a hold of our lives and we finally say yes, you know, so. Anyway.
Good point. 67 for me. When did you become a Christian?
1970.
I'm going to introduce one of my favorite Christians that's here as just the segue into our full guest this morning. And I know you will be blessed by meeting Mark Sanborn, but our friend Russ Johnson has been a part of Narrowgate Golf Club and our men's group, wow, for a long time. And I wanted Russ to come because he, for at least 3 years, has been saying to me, Bo, one of the greatest guys in town, in the country, in the world, is my friend Mark Sanborn. So I asked Russ to come here and introduce you today, Mark. So give us your top 10 on Mark before he speaks.
Top 10. We have that long. No, this is a good friend of mine. I've known Mark for about 6 years. He was one of my very first clients when I started my limousine business. I've read most of his books. I've heard him speak through several venues. He's a fellow believer. He's an accomplished author, of course, terrific husband and father, two great kids, an even better wife, my friend Mark Sanborn.
Well, thank you, Russ. You know, Russ has been privy to the background details of my life. I think one of Russ's favorite stories to tell on me is when I ended up buying another dog I didn't plan to buy, but I don't want to digress too far afield today. And Bob Belts married my wife, Darla, and I almost 14 years ago, hard to believe.
I know. And like Bo and I and Russ, you married way over your head.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I'm the president of the guys who overmarried club, and yeah. a lot of my pals are members. And Bo, the first time you and I met, even though we've gone to the same church for years and years, was back at a dental meeting I was speaking at when Garth Brooks, or Garth Brooks, right?
Yeah.
I have a friend named Garth Boyd, and for a minute I was about to give my friend Garth Boyd superstar status when Garth Brooks was performing for the Miles for Smiles that dental meeting in Phoenix, Arizona. So here it is. We're all together in the same room. And of course, I will say, you know, Russ is one degree of Russ. You've heard of 6 degrees of separation. Russ knows everybody in Denver. So if you ever need to know somebody, all you got to do is ping my pal Russ because Russ probably knows him.
Yeah. And he'll also tell everybody that he knows everything that you've told him that you wish no one would ever repeat or know about. Have you had that experience with Russ?
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's the mutual assured destruction. That's why nobody says anything bad about Russ, because they know he knows where the skeletons are buried.
Yeah, we're the president and vice president of Western Union and Associates. Just kidding, Russ. You do love people, and you do love friends like this Mark. By the way, when you finished that long introduction, I was thinking about Belts and I used to love a Steve Martin bit when he would say things like this about himself, and then he would say, but I know you're asking yourself the question, can he make balloon animals?
Cat juggling. So, I've heard about that.
No. All that stuff you do, Mark. Wow, busy life. So
I've seen him do balloon animals. He's pretty good.
But I don't play a banjo. I'm like Steve Martin.
And primarily these days, author, speaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaker and author. I mean, I'm a communicator, and that's, I don't have a real job. I started out in sales and marketing, but I've been in the speaking and writing business for about 24 years. And typical year, and I would say 2009 is not a typical year given the economy and the state of the meetings industry, but a typical year, I'd speak 60 or 70 times to audiences, primarily in North America. I'm a leadership guy. That's where my heart and passion is. My clients are corporate America by and large, but I am a believer, and that is the foundation of everything I do. You know, very often we use Christian as an adjective rather than as an identifier, and I'm a big believer that, you know, I'm not a Christian speaker, I'm a Christian who speaks, that you're not a Christian lawyer, you're a Christian who practices law. And very often we use our faith as just an adjective or as a modifier. But for me, it's my identity. And going back to what you said earlier, you know, I remind myself every day of two things. One, I'm a sinner saved by grace, and I prove that on a regular basis, regrettably. But the other thing—
We all do.
Yeah, we all, and it's humbling. I think that among the benefits of sin, if there are any, it's that it does keep us humble and keeps us dependent. But I also think that we tend to forget the second half, and that is that we are also saints who sometimes sin, and that we focus way too much on the staying sinners saved by grace than we do the saints who have been redeemed by Christ. And we've got to keep both of those opposing thoughts in mind, I think, if we want to live a life of faith.
Now, I'm sure I've said this, but I'm not sure I've said it on this program, but my little grandson, Mitchell, 7 years old, Mitchell Larson, my daughter's little boy, coming out of school this year, the last week of school, he was supposed to write something about his dad. So hitchhiking on what you just said, good place to start here. Mitchell's writing this little note. Of course, the printing's rather large. It's just amazing. I've framed it up now, haven't I, Mark?
It's in the hallway of our offices.
It is. But he says, my dad's a great baseball player. My dad really smashes the ball. He says a few things like that. And then he says what I thought was brilliant theology. Of course, I'm a little bit on this low level here, Russ. He said, my dad helps me with my homework, period. He erases the mistakes. And I thought, I know what he's saying there, but it hits me that do we as God's people even know what our homework is? A lot of times I forget what it is. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, your neighbors, yourself. I tell our Nuggets all the time before the games, you walk past the guard here tonight or any fan down this hallway, mistreat him, you've missed the whole point of being here tonight. And then beyond that, I would ask you this as a follow-up question to what you just said, Mark. Do we really think that he erases the mistakes? We all make mistakes. We're all, as you said, just sinners on the road. And sometimes, no matter how long I try to practice my faith, I think there's something in my core that wonders, does he really forgive me for my sin and my mess ups, or is there still a chart somewhere that's got my wrongs all listed on it? So just said it well, but talk a little more about that, and then we'll let the in-house theologian go.
Well, it's good we have a professional theologian here, because I'm an armchair amateur. But for me, it's the question of not just does he forgive my sins, but does he forgive them that, 70 times 70, because I blew right by that one a long time ago. Fenelon, who is one of my favorite authors, always has a very simple insight when I read his works. And he says that if you sin and you worry too much about sin, you're sinning again. You know, and he isn't suggesting that we should take sin lightly, but he is saying that if we sin and then we obsess about, oh man, I've messed up again, I've made a mistake, that we're cheapening, we're discounting the grace of God. So he doesn't suggest that we, you know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, you know, cheap grace is when you just keep sinning and you cheapen the grace of God by continuing to sin. Fenlon has a different take. He says you do the same thing when you worry too much, because you then become focused on self, and it's all about me, God. Oh man, I sinned again. So I think we've got to, again, strike that balance between knowing that God doesn't like sin, but that while we're here on this planet, we're still going to sin, and he does forgive, and he has actually forgotten. That's even the more amazing part, is he doesn't, you know, anybody that's married knows that it's hard to, you can forgive your spouse, but it's hard to forget, and occasionally that comes up. It's, I forgave you, but do you remember that time when? Fortunately, God doesn't do that.
I'm the president of the family who won't let it die. That's a good point,
Mark. We need to form another club, the men who overmarried and the guys who won't let it die, you know.
That's true. And this is Bo Mitchell. Bob Belts is my co-host. Program's You Get the Blessing. You're listening to the voice of Mark Sanborn, our guest today, and our friend Russ Johnson. Bob, jump in here and clear anything we've left that's foggy about this topic of sin and how we continue to do it.
You know, I was just sitting here thinking, I like where Mark kind of pushed this, because I do think that the grace side of things is so significant. On the forgiveness thing, you know, we were just kind of signaling each other across the table about the great verse in Psalm 103, where, and actually I'm going to read it because the verse before is so awesome too.
I was signaling you because I only knew two of the words and didn't know where it was.
Well, anyway, I had to look it up, so that's good.
Thank you.
Yeah. I used to know where it was. Now, David writes in this psalm, he says, "For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who have reverence for him." That in and of itself is a great verse. And then the next verse, "As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us." And, you know, east, you know, basically what you're saying, Mark, is like, for him, you know, once... And again, going back to the fact that it's all because of what Jesus has done. I mean, apart from that, we're in big trouble. But grace is just such a phenomenal theological reality. It's really the thing that makes you know, Christian faith distinct from every other world religion, because every other world religion is based upon doing something. In other words, you do things to sort of earn your way into favor with God. And Christian faith, properly understood, I think we get in that trap. I think a lot of times, even after we come to faith in Christ through what he's done, we kind of feel like the way we earn God's favors by what we do. And that's absolutely the opposite of what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that we can't earn anything, and God gives that gift because of what Christ has done. And anything else we do is really a response coming out of gratitude to that. And it's interesting, Mark, probably a guy you know well. Yesterday I was at a leadership conference, and Tim Keller was speaking from Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City. And he really is, you know, one of the great thinkers and communicators of our time. And his whole message, and I think his whole new book, was on the fact that the reason that churches are dead is not because of sin. He says he thinks the reason churches are dead is that people don't get grace and basically are sitting around trying to do stuff still to earn God's favor, and that from his perspective, that is like deadens people's faith instead of energizing it. So his whole thrust is you've got to get this grace thing deep, deep down, you know, into your psyche and your conscience. And hard for most of us, because most of us have spent most of our lives performing for favor. So,
and we're competitive. Yeah. So you ask Mark, do you want to be a better speaker or a worse speaker? Well, I think I'll try to be better. Do you want to have a better marriage or worse? Well, I think I'll have a better marriage. And everyone would say that. And yet on this issue, it's tough for us because spiritual push-ups aren't going to do it. Grace, the layman's definition, the linebacker's version, is unmerited favor. We get this free gift. So when did this start for you, Mark? When did this first make sense to you? Because there are people listening that this doesn't make sense to yet.
Well, yeah, it made sense to me when I was 8 years old. Both my mom and dad were Christians, and I was watching Billy Graham on the TV at home in rural Northeast Ohio that only got three channels. And I guess by the age of eight, I'd kind of had enough intellectual assent to understand what Billy Graham was saying when he made the invitation. And I was raised in a Christian environment, but probably went to a church that, you know, was less about grace and more about religion. Then in college, I found out that I could get away to a place where people didn't pay attention to what I was doing, and I tried a lot of things I never got to try back in the confines of my Christian home, and I did kind of the prodigal son. I don't want to compare myself to the biblical character, but I metaphorically kind of left my faith, and it wasn't until I moved to Colorado in 1987 that I recommitted my life. But you know, you were talking about people being competitive, and I just had to remember one of the big problems I know I have, and I think a lot of us have, is we're not just competitive, but we compare. And years ago, I was in Italy. My father was dying of cancer, and I knew he didn't have much time left. And I was on the Spanish Steps, which is in Rome, a very well-known gathering spot. And there's a lot of diversity of people. I mean, all walks of life are there. And there were these two guys, and they had a guitar, but no amplifier, an electric guitar, no amplifier. They had a bottle of cheap booze, and they were just wastes of human life. They were drunk. They were obnoxious. And I got angry. I mean, I remember sitting there watching them and this anger building up and almost to the point I wanted to just go over and just, without introducing myself, smack them, you know. And the reason I was angry is because my dad was one of the greatest men I ever knew, and he was dying, and here are two punks wasting this gift of life. And as I sat there, it hit me. I mean, it was a major epiphany, and that is, God loved those two kids as much as he loved my father or me or anyone else. That, you know, God doesn't do that and go, well, you know, these guys are a waste of time, forget about them, and your dad's a good guy, I'm going to take care of him. God loves us all the same, and so it was a real turning point when I went from this anger of the injustice of it all to the amazingness of, wow, God loves the least of these as much as he loves the greatest of what we would call the greatest of those among us.
Hmm. Good word.
Yeah, it is. By the way, going on with your analogy of the prodigal son, in case you're out there listening and, you know, don't know that, this great parable that Jesus told in Luke 15, yesterday Keller was saying, by the way, you know, he said, this isn't even about, everybody thinks this story is about the prodigal son. And he said, if you go back and look who it was addressed to, it was really addressed to the religious leaders. The real story is about the older son who stayed home, did it all right, and is really mad when the younger brother, you know, comes back and dad throws the party and everything. And again, kind of pointing out that we all look at the story and know that the younger son didn't know the father's heart, or he never would have left. But the reality is the older son that never left but didn't get it either, you know, didn't understand the father's heart, that hey, it was all yours.
He was going through the motions. I mean, and we see that a lot, you know, and I think that's why there's a lot of criticism of believers is that people go through the motion, but people sense there's something deeper missing. I got to tell you a story. I think, you know, every once in a while you have something happen and you go, well, this kind of summarizes it. I went to Israel, Darla and I, my wife and I went to Israel with Cherry Hills Community Church, and Dr. Jim Dixon, who I know you're both very close friends with, led this trip. And there are two places where they think Jesus was buried. One is the Garden Tomb, which you kind of hope is where he was buried because it looks like what your mind's eye conjured up. But then the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Catholics have built a church over what is probably, according to scholars, where he actually was buried in the tomb. And inside the church, there's a like a little mausoleum, and you wait in line for 30, 40, 50 minutes to go inside and see where Jesus was buried. Well, while you're waiting, a few people kind of try to cut, and people are from all over the world. And
cut in line.
Yeah, cut in line to see Jesus. Yeah, to see where their Lord and Savior was buried.
For the bake sale at church.
When most people were deterred by the hissing, because everybody speaks a different language, so you can't say, hey, you, or, you know, so everybody kind of hisses, and most people are deterred. But these two women I'm almost to the front with Darla and our friends. I'm almost to the front of the line. These two women, everybody, they start to go in and people start to hiss. So they hold up a camera like they're just getting a picture. And as soon as the one takes a picture, then they rush in. And they don't just, it's a tiny area. I don't know if you've ever been there,
yeah,
but it's
have,
a tiny area. And they stay. And I remember thinking two things. I thought, number one, I thought, is this not human nature? Here are these religious Christians who are cutting in line to go see where Jesus was buried. And the second thing I thought, I want to smack them, which is another point of theology, and that my reaction was just as bad as their behavior.
Absolutely.
You know, so in other words, I mean, I
but you were right.
Oh, and then they were in there when I went in, but I didn't, I by the grace of God, I did not say anything. But that's exactly human nature. They rushed in, and I responded, not with grace, but with justice, which is drag them out, you know, stone them. They've rushed into the tomb of Jesus.
And we forget that so often, you know, and I think this is, you know, again, if you, you know, if you're outside the, you're not on the team, you know, and you're kind of looking at, you know, church and believers and stuff, I think, you know, that when we get self-righteous, gee, many Christmas. It just misses the whole deal. You know, I mean, this is the only club in the world you can join by admitting you're a total failure. And then once you get in the club, it's like, you know, you get this attitude of like, boy, look at those guys, you know.
And, so you don't need me to connect this thought if you're listening, but I'm going to connect it. We're saying here, we're nothing special. Christ is special in our lives. Therefore, we have a purpose and a meaning and a place to go with when we mess up and react like Mark says he did there in line, or like we have over and over in our lives. But we're also saying to you, if God's this forgiving, be forgiving to yourself and to each other. Let yourself up. And if you're clueless about what we're talking about here, go expose yourself to guys that have studied the scriptures and will teach and preach about these subjects. Go to church. Find whatever church fits for you. And I want to jump topics now and say, again, Mark, so I go to a meeting, I'm listening to you, I've heard you speak, and yet would you describe yourself as instructional, motivational? Bob would describe himself teacher rather than preacher, which you've heard him and he is. But so when somebody comes to hear you, what are they going to take away?
I've never ever called myself a motivational speaker, but my publisher has always put that on my dust jackets and my books. So I think most people lacking any other way to explain what somebody does uses that phrase. I'd like to think, A, I'm a professional reminder, because Samuel Johnson once said, most people don't need to be taught, they need only to be reminded. And I wish I was so clever that I was coming up with new material that no one had ever thought about before in the course of their life. But really, I think one of the things I do is remind people about what's important that may have got pushed to the back burner. But the other thing is I, like
so
Bob...
So practical stuff, you're saying.
I hope so. I hope it's practical, because, you know, we live in an age, postmodernism has introduced me to an interesting concept. You know, as a baby boomer, my first question was, when I heard somebody say something, is it true? And you'll know if you're a baby boomer, because whenever you hear something dubious, you think, wait a minute, is it true? But somebody once said that postmoderns, Generation X and Y and beyond, they're less worried about is it true than is it relevant? You know, and that if it's relevant, then they are probably concerned about the validity. But I think that that's so important when we communicate. You know, it doesn't matter if it's true, if it doesn't have any impact on somebody's life. It's not going to engage them. It's not going to hook them. And so we have to make what we're saying relevant before people wonder or even concern themselves with the truth of what's being said. And the reason that this comes to mind is, you know, going this whole faith issue, so often we hear people who are Christians arguing over things that are very important from a truth standpoint, but the average person says, I don't get what that has to do with me. I'm not really sure what, you know, premillennial and postmillennial and pre-trib. Sounds interesting, but I don't think it's relevant. So I try to talk to people about what I think is relevant and what I hope they agree is relevant for being better people and better business people.
And how can folks find out about where you'll be speaking next and what books you have out there they can purchase?
There's the Mothership website is my name, marksanborn.com, marksanborn.com. And if you live in Denver, it's funny, you might be thinking, man, I've seen that name. My brother is a business broker. He's Sanborn & Company. So when you see signs up, it's probably a building that's for sale or lease. That's Sanborn & Company. I'm Sanborn & Associates. He's a broker and I'm a talker. Although if you knew my brother, you'd agree he's a talker too, but just a different line of business.
You know, side note here, Bob, tell our listeners about your new book and where they can get your book, and then we'll go back and talk some more about Mark's stuff.
Right. Well, talking about McCartney earlier in the Beatles, the new book is a novel called Me and McCartney, and in Denver you can get it at Tattered Cover, where Mark's books are also, and you know, Amazon.com, but it helps if you get it at Tattered Cover. So, anyway.
And I've read the book. It's great. And
Russ liked it too. Russ said, "I got it." He told me I had to. I read Route 66. I haven't read the new book yet.
Yeah, it's fun.
And other titles that they're going to find when they go to your website besides The Fred Factor?
The Fred Factor is the book that I'm most well known for. You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader is one of my favorite books because that really sums it up. You want to be a positive influencer at work and in life. That's what that book talks about. And my last book, the most recent book, hopefully not my last book. That was a spooky. It was my last book, and he was hit by an RTD bus shortly after the interview was completed. It's called The Encore Effect, How to Give a Remarkable Performance in Anything You Do.
Oh, great, great.
Great. So, a prophet goes without honor in his own land. Here I'm sitting with two guys that are great speakers, great
writers. What we're really good at is riding motorcycles. That's, okay. That's what we do together.
Well, so somebody listening wants to do that with you. But please go to marksanborn.com, and please be encouraged by what we're saying today in your own life, that you don't have to obsess about sin, as Mark said earlier. In fact, if you're doing that, you're just kind of digging a deeper hole and sinning again. But know there is a place you can go with the loneliness you may be feeling, the financial pressure, the call you just got from your doctor saying you're sick or you got a loved one sick. And as the Beatles song says, we encourage you to say hello to Christ and goodbye to all that loneliness and pain you might be feeling. Mark, you've been a wonderful guest.
Thanks. Thank you. My pleasure. Yeah. My pleasure.
And you'll come back again?
I hope so.
And Russ, you are a stud. We love you. Thanks for always smiling and
being fun, Russ.
A good guy.
Fun Russ.
Everything is fun. Did you think this was fun?
Yeah.
His nickname's Fun Russ, by the way. Everything's fun. We out of time? Okay, let's hear the Beatles, and we'll see you next week right here on KOA. Thanks for tuning in.
You say goodbye, and I say hi.